Thank you for coming. This is my third presentation. Tonight we're going to talk about wolves, and I'll go into a little bit of their ecology, natural history. If you were at the cougar talk yesterday, you know the cougars are in the cat family. They're very solitary animals. When the cougars have young, it's just the mother that raises the young for the next 2 and 2.5 years. It's a whole different story with wolves. Wolves are families. They live in a family, a pack, and when the young are born, the whole pack, the alpha male, the aunts, the cousins, the siblings, all work as a unit to take care of the family. So I'll talk a little bit about that. They're very different than the cougars. And should I leave the lights on or should I turn those off?
I don't think we need them on, do we?
Turn these back ones on if you want.
I just want, as long as everybody can see the... It does, and feel free to ask if you have any questions. Feel free to interrupt me at any time. So, as I said, I'll be talking about the biology status of wolves in Washington, a little bit about the history. And then I'll talk about Washington State's management plan that they have for the wolves. So if you've been to my previous lectures about bears and cougars, it's unfortunately kind of the same story with wolves. Ever since early settlers, European settlers, came to the United States and moved west, the wolf has just been hunted, trapped, and poisoned until essentially they disappeared by the 1930s. There were no wolves in the U.S. There might have been a few up in northern Michigan and northern Minnesota that were coming down from Canada. But in the 1800s to the early 1900s, there were bounties on wolves, so if you shot a wolf and brought the pelt in, you'd get money for it. Occasionally there were some stray wolves seen, and people would report seeing wolves, but there was no established populations by the 1930s in the United States. I just threw this cartoon in because it shows the dog with the giant nose and the man with the gun, and these wolves back here are going, well, we just might as well surrender because we have no chance. We have no chance against man's incursions into our territory. In Washington State, well, let's start up here. So in 1973, the federal government declared the gray wolf as endangered in the United States. In 1980, Washington State declared them as an endangered species. In 2008, the federal government decided that all the wolves east of Washington, so Idaho, Montana, Wyoming, didn't need to be protected anymore. But then they drew this strange line down the middle of Washington and said all the wolves over on this side are still federally endangered. But if you live on this side of the line, then you're off the federal endangered species list. A whole bunch of conservation and environmental groups didn't like that, so they sued the federal government. And then in 2008, they reversed that decision. So once again, Idaho, Montana, Wyoming wolves were put back on the endangered species list. But then in 2009, they were delisted again in the Northern Rocky Mountains. They were delisted. And then in 2010, they were sued again and they were relisted. And it's been this back and forth between a lot of the state governments, so Idaho State, Montana State, Wyoming State governments wanting the federal government to delist the wolves so they could, the state could take over management of the wolf populations in their state. And it's been a back and forth, kind of a tug of war, and a very hot political, hot potato politically. So a little bit about a wolf and how do you know when you're actually looking at a wolf. The wolf can be and is frequently confused with the coyote, but some very distinguishing characteristics. Coyotes have this long, narrow nose, very pointy ears. The wolves have shorter ears and a more robust nose and mouth. They're also, obviously, if they were side by side, the wolf is much bigger. The wolf has really strong, a little bit more fur on their legs. The wolf, coyote has these skinny little pencil legs. So now that I've given you that, we'll have a little test here. So what's that?
Wolf,
right? That?
Coyote.
That?
Wolf.
It's kind of tough.
That's a coyote.
That's a wolf.
That's a wolf. Oh.
Yeah. And that?
Coyote.
That's a coyote. So it's pretty hard to tell the difference. So the biologists are always questioning people when they get on the phone and they say, you know, a wolf carried off my dog, or a wolf ate my sheep. It's really, really tough to tell. And so here again, these are coyotes and wolves. So what do you think that is?
Coyote,
right. Big ears, narrow nose. That?
Wolf.
That's a pregnant wolf. It actually, here in Washington, just north of Lake Chelan. This?
Coyote.
Yeah, big ears, spiny legs. This?
Wolf.
A one-year-old wolf pup, yep.
Wolf.
Yep, that's also like a one-year-old wolf pup. And that?
German Shepherd.
That's a good point. Wait, you'll see my next slide.
No, so is that
a... That is a wolf pup, I believe. This is
coyote,
wolf, right, good. Yeah, very good. But, you know, if you get a glimpse of these, or you see them for 1 minute, and you're in the wild, I mean, I myself, it's real easy to mix them up. Sorry about this slide, but this is a wolf track and this is a coyote track. It's just kind of showing you the difference in size. So the person that said German Shepherd, well, there exists, to further confuse the whole situation, there are wolf-dog hybrids. And actually in Washington State, they estimate that there's something like 5 to 10,000 wolf-dog hybrids in Washington State. These are all hybrids. And it's illegal in certain counties in Washington State to have a wolf-dog hybrid, mainly because a wolf-dog hybrid, for about the first year of their life, they're playful, fun little dogs. But then when they get 2, 3, and 4 years old, they turn into wolves. They have much more of the wolf characteristics. So I do not recommend that you get a wolf-dog hybrid as a pet. So a little bit about the natural history. As I mentioned, the wolf pack is very social. It's a family. The alpha male and the alpha female mate for life. They are married partners until one of them is deceased or hot, you know, hunted or shot, then they'll go and find another mate. But average pack size is 5 to 10, although in Yellowstone National Park, they've had pack sizes all the way up to 30 individuals. A pack consists of an alpha male and an alpha female, offspring of that year and offspring of previous years. So there's like a whole family structure of cousins and aunts and uncles. And yeah, that's about it. They're very, very social animals. Okay, so the females will breed around 2 to 3 years old. They mate in February. They will go and find a den in April and give birth. Average litter size is 4 to 6 pups. And then they're in these den sites for a short period after they're born, and then the mother will pick them up and move them to these rendezvous sites, which I'll talk about in a minute.
And is it just the alpha and alpha male and female that breed? None of the other females breed with the alpha male?
That's a good question. So typically in a pack, it's just the alpha male and the alpha female that breed year after year. The young females that after when they reach maturity, they can, they will sometimes breed with a male from another pack. And so it is possible and somewhat normal that they'll have two litters. They'll have the alpha male and female litter, and then they'll have an offspring female will have another. Sometimes there is two litters to take care of. And then while the mother is watching the pups, the pack will go and hunt and bring back food. So after about 8 weeks, the mother will pick up the pups one by one, put them in her mouth, and take them to what's called a rendezvous site, which is another den, usually close to water. Mm. And they will stay at these rendezvous sites, and then the mother will start and go off and hunt. But they always leave. One member of the wolf pack always stays with the pups. So when the alpha female is well enough and ready to go hunt, she'll leave, and now she'll leave one of her offspring, or somebody always stays with the pups. At about 5 months, the pups will travel with the adults. They won't let them hunt until they're about 7 or 8 months. Then they start hunting. They reach full size around 9 months. And then, just like the cougars and the bears, at about 2 to 3 years old, the offspring, particularly the males, will disperse and go try to find a mate and establish their own territory. This is their primary prey. In the Northwest, Idaho, Montana, Wyoming, number one prey is elk. Second prey would be deer, and then moose. Those are the three big prey items for deer. For the wolves. And the different from cougars, so the wolf pack, they're long distance runners. They chase down their prey. Unlike the cougar, which waits in hiding and then pounces on the prey. So the wolves do take, if you're in a race with a wolf and you're a deer, you're more likely to get taken by the wolves if you're hurt, if the deer's injured, if it's old, if it's sick, you're more likely to get brought down by the wolves. So the wolves cull the weak from the herd. And they always look for the most vulnerable. And this is an example of the wolves picking out the most vulnerable in the pack. This guy right here. Now, the wolves up in Alaska will travel with the caribou hundreds of miles. They'll follow the caribou.
But don't they, the caribou have huge herds too, don't they?
Oh, yeah.
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 So there's always something to pick off.
Yes.
Yeah. Yep.
So secondary prey items of the wolves, fish if they're on the coast, beaver, grouse, marmots, squirrels. And then this is really no surprise. In Yellowstone, the wolf pack that feeds primarily on bison, they actually have, they've become, they're usually the largest and biggest wolves. They have a larger body size because they're going after one of the toughest things to bring down, a big old bison. So that's no real surprise. And then if there's lots of prey items around, then obviously the wolves don't have to travel as far. They have a smaller home range. So the wolves, as I mentioned, they follow the deer and elk and the caribou. They go where the prey is. And then this is an interesting, I wanted to read a really quick, brief story. I was reading this book, Three Among the Wolves, and it's a story about a husband and wife and their dog, and they go to live with the wolves up in somewhere up in Alaska or Canada, way up north. And they went out one day. They're in the middle of nowhere. And so it's this husband and wife and their dog. They went out one day to follow the wolves while they were hunting, and they were following the wolves. They came to a 50-foot wide creek, and the wolves scattered out to go across the creek and then disappeared on the other side. The family, the husband and wife, started walking across the creek, fell through the ice, barely made it back, and as they were struggling back on shore, they noticed some ravens that were watching them. And I wanted to read this because I've had some encounters with ravens, and the ravens are in the corvid family, and those are the smartest birds in one of the smartest families of birds. The Native Americans and the First Nations people in Canada always said that the ravens talk to the wolves. They really believe that. And who would know better than the Native Americans and the First Nations people in Canada, because they live out in nature. So this is an example of the ravens talking to the wolves. Okay, so they fell out in the ice. They got out, and they were taking their clothes off and warming up. And one of them says, now we know why the wolves fanned out to cross the river. They were smart enough to know that the ice was weaker than it looked. Soon, four ravens arrived and circled overhead as I put on my spare clothes. The birds landed on a tussock mound a few feet away and started to caw softly. Do you think they're concerned by our close call? I whispered. If they are, I'm ready to believe anything, Bill said. Two ravens wobbled toward us through the cotton grass, still chatting quietly. Charlie, our dog, lay down, making no attempt to approach them. Considering his intense dislike of the birds, we were surprised. As I finished dressing, two ravens hopped to within 6 feet of us, still cawing gently. Soon, all four circled us on the ground, talking softly. After 10 minutes of circling, the ravens flew to the top of the branches of a spruce tree and raised their voices in a loud, hard-edged cackle. This summoned the wolves. A wolf, the alpha, howled from the far from the far bank. Surprised, we turned to see four wolves looking on as Alpha howled again. A few flaps of the raven's huge wings lofted them over the river to the trees above the wolves. As the wolves disappeared into the forest, the ravens followed overhead. A quarter of a mile away, the ravens circled once, then descended below treetop level to what we presumed was a kill site of the wolves. The ravens and wolves must have been close enough to hear us shouting, Bill said. They must have sensed that we were in trouble. The ravens seemed concerned, I agreed. But what about the wolves? How do they fit into this? The ravens understood our predicament, we guessed, and as soon as the crisis was over, had called the wolves. The two howls from the wolves seemed to represent some sort of communication between the species. Remember Billy McCaw and what he told us about ravens? I said as we headed back to camp, and Billy McCaw was their First Nation Indian friend. Billy was an elder of the Gwich'in First Nation, whom we had met 2 years ago. He told us that wolves and ravens talk to each other. So old he could not remember his own age, Billy had spoken to us in a raspy voice with a faraway look in his faded eyes. Ravens call the wolves and lead them to prey, he said. After the wolves eat, the birds take what's left. Ravens will call the wolves to an injured animal, too. They know more than all the animals in the north. When I asked him if ravens helped humans to hunt, he replied, sometimes they do. It is said that they will help only those who respect them. It is said that a long time ago, my grandfather's dog sled overturned and he hurt his leg. Ravens who followed him on the hunt flew 2 miles back and screeched and circled until his brother paid attention and followed them to my grandfather. Many of our elders can tell when a raven is serious and is talking. So, after reading that, I thought, you know, the ravens are talking to the wolves. They know that the ravens will fly ahead and see the prey and then start cawing loudly, and that draws the wolves into where the prey is. So they have a great relationship. All right, so moving on. The wolves are all, so you've heard me talk about this web of life. The wolves eat the deer eat all the aspen and the willows, which is what the beaver feeds on, and it's all connected. Everything is connected. In Yellowstone, they did a little bit of a study. They came up with this thing they call the ripple effect. Before there were wolves in Yellowstone National Park, the elk would feed on all these riparian areas along the streams and whittle down the willows and all the aspen. And the aspen and willows were what the beaver used to build dams, which influenced the fish and the other species in the lake, which also influenced the songbirds that use the willows. And it basically what they were saying was this is all connected. Trying to basically talk about the importance of wolves to the ecosystem. So in Washington State, let's see, in 2005, the Washington State realized that there were a lot of wolves in Idaho, Montana, and Wyoming, and there were increasingly reports of wolves coming into Washington. So Washington State finally decided, before there were even wolves in Washington, they decided that they better come up with a management plan for wolves. Because they knew that these wolves were going to gradually move from Montana to Idaho into Washington, which is exactly what happened. In 2008, Washington got its very first wolf pack, and this is Lake Chelan right here, and Holden's right here. This is Winthrop Twistberry. So in 2008, Washington State had its first wolf pack that was confirmed. This is actual pictures of that actual wolf pack. These are all members of that wolf pack. They confirmed that there were six pups in 2008. But later on that year, a local rancher went up and shot and poached the wolves. They keep in mind that they were, at this time, these wolves were listed as federally endangered. So to poach, to kill or harass any federally listed endangered animal, it was a big deal. A local rancher shot and killed a bunch, actually most of the pack. And I don't know if you heard the story, but I'll tell you really quickly. Somebody brought in a box to the local UPS office in Omak or Okanagan, and the local UPS guy was handling the box, and he noticed that blood was coming out of the box. And so he called, the police or the fishing game. They came there, they opened up the box, and it was a wolf pelt. So the guy that had poached the wolf had taken a pelt, put it in a box, and was sending it to I don't know where. But anyways, that's how they found out that he was responsible for poaching these wolves. He subsequently got fined, had to go to court. They took away his guns, and he took away his hunting license for like 2 years, I think. And then because they were poached, the pack dissipated, it disappeared. They did, in 2010, they did find the breeding female still alive, and she actually moved from north of Lake Chelan to south of Lake Chelan. A couple more packs started, Idaho's over here, a couple more packs started coming in. Some wolves were coming in from Canada, and there gradually we got our second pack, then we got our third pack. There was a pack that came over from down here in Idaho to this part of Washington. This was the number of packs that we had about 5 or 6 years ago, and currently there are 19 wolf packs in Washington. So they're mostly up in here. Down here, this is Cleellum and, or the somewhere, Cleellum, Stevens Pass, maybe area. Just to give you an idea of the numbers, Idaho has, in 2009, Idaho had 843 wolves, 94 packs, and 49 breeding pairs. Idaho, currently the wolves in Idaho, I believe, are delisted. So are the ones in Montana. So you can actually hunt wolves in Idaho. I believe you can hunt them in Wyoming, too. Montana has, the state of Montana, I believe, still has them listed as endangered. So you can't hunt them in Montana.
So when you say successful breeding pairs, that means that they had pups or didn't, or weren't able to breed, or
so
pups died. What were some of the reasons?
That's a good question. So what they mean by successful breeding pairs is that there's an alpha male and an alpha female. They've had pups, and that pack has maintain that breeding pair for a period of 2 to 3 years. When that happens, they're considered a breeding pair, successful breeding pair.
So of the other packs, then, do those not have alpha male and females, or just, is there alpha male or female leading the pack?
No, they do have probably alpha male and females, but they're not, for some reason or another, they're not successful at in a 2 to 3 year interval of successfully breeding. It could be the pups, it could be they died, could have been they were diseased, they were injured, they just didn't maybe they had pups, but they didn't survive 2 years. They've done a couple surveys. In general, in Washington State, people are supportive of the wolves coming back. But if you dig into the details, if you live in a rural area or you're a rancher or farmer, you're not really happy about wolves coming back. And this is a long history of ranching and cattle and sheep farming. Way back to the late 1800s, if you were a rancher or sheep herder, the wolves do occasionally prey on sheep. And so if you're a rancher, that's your livelihood. And so their solution to wolf predation was to shoot the wolf. Even today, your modern rancher and sheep guy, they're wary about the wolf coming back. So Washington State developed a management plan for wolves. Two important key points about the Washington State plan is, number one, no wolves isn't an option, so they're not going to totally stop the wolves that are coming into Washington State. And then this is kind of important. Unlike Idaho and Yellowstone, they actually, in 1995, they released wolves in Yellowstone, about 30 animals. Mm. There were no wolves in Yellowstone up until 1995, but they brought them down from Canada, released them in Yellowstone, and then the next year in 1996, they released about 30 in Idaho. Mm. In Washington, the state will not allow any releasing or reintroduction of wolves. If the wolf is going to come to Washington, it's going to come naturally from Canada or from Idaho. Washington, the Department of Fish and Game established a working group. It's 17 citizens that help advise. They advise the Washington Fish and Game on what to do with wolves. And you can imagine, it's a hot topic. The people that live up here in Okanagan County are, it's a very rural county. There's a lot of ranchers. They're one of the most vocally opposed counties to the wolf coming back to Washington. Of course, if you live over here in Seattle, most people are, if you live in the city, they're like, oh yeah, I love the wolf, I can see him on TV, and I don't have to, they're not going to be in my backyard. Washington State, for their management plan, they split the state into these three areas. And the plan was that each one of these areas would be allowed a certain number of wolves. As I mentioned before, there are wolf-livestock conflicts. There are organizations like Conservation Northwest here that they help ranchers with all these different methods of preventing wolf predation. One of the most successful is hiring what they call a range rider. Basically, it's a person that rides the range and works out there, and he's out among the cattle. It's very successful. There are obviously big game conflicts. If you're a hunter, the wolves have changed the behavior of the elk and deer. Before there were wolves, there wasn't a lot of predation on elk and deer, so the elk and deer were grazing the meadows, and they didn't really have to worry about anything. When you introduce the wolf, now the elk and deer are a lot more vigilant. They're not spending all day with their head down grazing. Now they're looking around a lot more, which means it's going to be harder as a hunter because the elk and the deer are a lot more attentive because they're looking for wolves. So it hasn't necessarily impacted the population of deer and elk, as I'll point out later. But it's changed the behavior of the deer and elk, which makes the hunt a little bit harder, and of course the wolf get blamed for taking all the deer and elk, and I just threw this in because anytime deer numbers or elk numbers drop in a hunting unit, people, the anti-wolf group quickly say it's because of the wolf. But it's based on the data. It's a whole different story. So this is Idaho, and these are all wolf packs, the solid red circles. The circles with hash mark are suspected wolf packs. But in Idaho, 23 of 29 game units, their elk units, their hunting units, 23 of their units are at or above the targeted elk and deer populations. And Idaho has, you know, look at all the packs in Idaho. So you can't hardly say that the wolf is responsible for decimating or lowering the population of deer and elk. It's not the case. That's just not the case. So in Washington State, how many wolves are they going to allow according to the plan? Well, they split the state up into these three areas, and Their plan is to only allow 15 breeding pairs in the entire state. And if you remember that map where it was split up into three different areas, this is the number in each area of breeding pairs. When they get down to these numbers, they're going to take them off the endangered species list, and they'll become a game species. You'll be allowed to hunt them in Washington. I personally think 15 breeding pairs is way, way low. I mean, you're talking about
two in Eastern Washington.
It's just kind of ridiculous. These are the zones again. So if you go back here, Eastern Washington, they're going to allow two breeding pairs all the way from Canada down to the Blue Mountains. And then as soon as they hit three, they'll take them off the endangered species list. They'll become a game species. The numbers are pretty low.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's all I have. I do have one more last... could you hit the lights over there? I do have one last thing I want to read you, and then I will take questions. Here it is. So, way back in the 60s, there were wolves up in, I've got to pronounce it right, Algonquin National Park in Canada?
Algonquin.
How do you pronounce it?
Algonquin.
Algonquin. The up in that park, they were just starting to manage the wolves up there, and they found out, the biologists found out that in the winter it was really easy to count the wolves because you could go out and count tracks or spot them from an airplane. But in summer, they couldn't figure out how to do a good count of the wolves. And somebody figured out that the wolves would respond to a howl. So they recorded wolf howls, and they would go out in the summer and play with a megaphone these wolf howls, and then the wolves, if they were in the woods, would respond. Mm-hmm. Well, then they found out that the wolves would respond to even a really shoddy human wolf call. So they got rid of their bullhorn. They would drive out at night in the park and how. And then if a wolf responded, then they would count, that's how they counted the numbers. Well, the local population got wind of the biologists doing that, and they're like, well, you know, I that sounds like fun. I'd kind of like to see you do it. So, let's see. So it says, visitors in the local campground were so interested in what the biologists and naturalists were doing, explaining the wolf research program, that it was decided to try taking a few of them to a sure-hit howling place for a first-hand listen. They figured people were interested and they were asking, so we'll take a few of them out. So an announcement about the event was slipped into the back pages of the park newsletter called The Raven. On August 7th, 1963, on August 17th, the naturalists drove to the appointed meeting place at the Two Rivers Campground off Highway 60 to see if anyone was willing to take them up on their offer. To their astonishment, 600 people in 180 vehicles jammed the roads of the campground, ready to go wolf howling. And so began the park tradition of a green park vehicle leading a several miles long snake of red taillights through the darkened recesses of southern Algonquin Park. That first public wolf howl got only a faint reply from one lonely wolf. But as the park staff got more organized, the results improved dramatically. On a good night, 1,000 people in 250 cars would park along a dirt forest access road with impossible quiet. A naturalist would begin to howl, and another would join in, and as the wolves yipped and hooted in reply, the hair on the backs of 1,000 necks would rise.
Very cool.
All right, so that's all I have. And if you have any questions or anybody wants to talk about the whole history of wolves and why we have to shoot them.
Don't we have a wolf group in Western Washington that takes in wolves to over by Tenino somewhere?
Yeah.
Is it Wolf Haven, isn't it?
Yeah, there, Wolf Haven. There's a couple of wolf sanctuaries. But you know what? They're quickly run out of room. Mm-hmm. It's just like with bear. There are organizations that will take bears, mm-hmm. both black bears and grizzlies, when they're, you know, if a mother's killed. Mm-hmm. But it's really, really hard to find homes for those. There aren't enough places to take them. One of the things I had this crazy idea that Holden Village should declare itself. It would all be symbolic, of course, but you could declare yourselves as a wolf sanctuary or a bear sanctuary. Holden is in the heart. You can't get more in the heart of bear and wolf and cougar country than Holden.
But, have you ever tried to go out and howl to see if you get an answer?
No, but I will. I want to. I do hoot for owls because when I was doing owl research, I learned how to do that. You can go out in the woods and hoot, and if there's a owl nearby, he'll hoot back. But I've never tried it for wolves. You know what? If I was up here longer, I would do that here. I would go up, maybe go up a mile up to Holden Lake Trail, and you know where it's open, and just howl and see what happens.
I know that a year or two ago when they had the camera trap set up, they caught the wolverine and then bobcat and cougar, but no dogs.
Yeah, tomorrow I'll talk about the wolverine, and I have information on the Sasha, which is the Holden wolverine. She was radio collared on the other side of this ridge, but she, her territory, it comes down into Holden Village area.
Hopefully she survived the fire.
What's that?
Hopefully she survived the fire.
Well, she doesn't have a collar on anymore, and they don't know if she's still alive. That's... Anyways, thank you very much. Tomorrow night I'll do Wolverines.